Accession number 16729, Mr. William Ridley, Reel 7.
Mr. Ridley, Reel 7. We were talking about your retreat from Vimy Ridge, Mr. Ridley.
Yeah, and as we marched in that day, I'm going back a little bit, the sound of music was coming from one of the houses. Piano going like the clappers. And we investigated, and there was about three or four swaddies sitting out the piano with the shells flying all over the place, and it was playing the piano in the thing. Anyway, to get back to the bombing raid, we the sergeant said, he says, we'll leave them till after dark, he says, and then we'll go and get them. Well, they had hit, some of the lads must have been in, there was a big long hut that was stopped with groceries and foodstuff and whatever, and the lads must have been in trying to get some grub, like, you know, and that had went up, and you could hear them, you know, shouting, you know, nobody could get near them, the place was ablaze, like, you know, but you could hear them shouting, and I was looking for this body, and I came across one body. Now, I don't know, somebody might have put them, like, when it was light, but I found him, and he was lying at attention. He had his tin hat on, he had his pack on, and he was lying face up, and he had his rifle in the crooks of his arm, and you would just think he was lying to attention. Now, whether somebody had put him that way, I don't know. The other one we found him, we couldn't move him. So we got, I tore one of the shutters off one of the houses, you know, the French houses nearly, all of them had shutters, white shutters on. So I got this shutter off and we took it back, and we tried to lift them on, but when we lifted the top part on, the bottom part stayed where it was, like, you know, and it was only his buttons on his battle dress and his pants that was keeping his body together, like, you know, just mush. And this is the only time ever I was sick. And it was night time, but the flames from the burning warehouses and that sort of thing was lighting the place. It was just like daylight, like. And I says, well, put the shutter against them, standing up like that, and roll them onto the shutter. And you came on, and the other three lads got on each corner of the shutter, and I got on the front part, and I got a hold of the end of the shutter that I thought was the raggy end of the shutter, and I lifted, and I had a hold of his shattered leg. It was his the bone of his leg that I had a hold of. I thought it was the shutter, the end of the shutter, and that's the only time that I ever felt, you know, as if I was going to be sickly, and that was the last time, you know, the first and last. And we took him, and we done what we'd done with the rest of them. They dug a hole in one of the gardens of the place, and they just tipped them all in the one grave.
The mutilation must have been a terrible shock to you. You'd not been used to death.
No,
have you?
I mean, this was it. You know, I mean, it was. I mean, there was bits of blokes all over the place. One of the strangest things I ever saw at that place as well. There was a army BSA bike, and it was stuck about 10 foot on the wall, embedded in the brickwork. And you just think somebody just put it up as an ornament. They'd blown it, you know. The big Bessie motorbike there, you know, stuck on the wall. Now after that, I can't remember what happened after that. I think we were bussed from there, and they put me into buses, and I can remember that I got into this bus, onto this truck, and I remember putting my arm through the superstructure. All the lads was in the truck, and there was no place to sit down, you know. So I hooked my arm round the superstructure and on between the canvas and the superstructure there, and that was the last I knew. And what happened was that what woke us up, the truck had went over a little humbunk bridge, and you went all that fast and everything went up, like, I don't know how long I would been asleep standing up. I haven't got a clue, but what I did know was I couldn't feel my arm for hours after, because it was tonguing up like that. And when we got off the truck, there was fires all over the place, little campfires. And I thought, oh, can't it be that? We must have come a canny way from the front, like, you know. And all the trucks were standing, just parked anywhere, like. And there was a lad called Hooky Walker, and who was a friend of the lad that you interviewed, Dick Richardson, you know. And Hooky was a bit of a character, and he used to play in the band, flute, clarinet. And him and the clarinet and another lad had some saxophone or something, and they had a makeshift little concert on the back of a truck. And this was a dawn. And I can't remember getting out to eat there either. And we thought, oh great, we must be away from it there. But anyway, the sergeant major come up and he says, right, he says, want you to go, and he picked us. Right, the company sergeant major came up and got around, and he said, right, he says, I want a platoon of men to go and take up a position on this small track that was overlooking the canal. And he chose about 15 of us, mostly off the Bugle Band, which was Akak and that. Their duty was Akak, but everybody was fighting on the ground now. There was no Akak, everybody was frontline soldiers. And they were put in charge of us, Platoon Sergeant Major Armstrong. And we took up this position, and as we marched, all the company sergeant major had said, like, that we hadn't to worry. There was no troop, there was no Germans in the vicinity. You were just there to watch this canal and what have you, and this road. And the sergeant made a march across the road, across the this ploughed field to the position where it happened to take up. And as we were marching across, a machine gun opened fire scattered the earth around with, and which increased our pace quite considerably till we got to this road. And the road was unlike a French road. It wasn't a sunken road. It was the opposite. It was a road that run like a ridge, and there was an embankment up to the road, and we dug ourselves in behind this road and in under the and made niches for ourselves, and we were made to dig a hole for the sergeant major, who was made a hole for him, and he occupied that hole, and the only time he came out over the next 3 or 4 days that we were there was when the grub come up, which only come up once or twice, man, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And as we came across the field, and the sergeant major turned round to one of the men and he said, "I want to go back and report the head up, report the sergeant major, the company sergeant major, that we'd been fired on." And this soldier refused, and he again told, instead of making that soldier go, he went to another one of the soldiers and he said, "I want you to go." And the other soldier, he refused, and saying, "Look, you told this guy to go first, he should go," and the other one refused. And to be quite honest with you, I've never been a brave person, but I was so ashamed of it that I said, "Look," I says, "Boogies," I says, "I'll go." And so all it had to do, I had to retrace the steps which we had come, and I nipped down the thing, and I think I was fired on about twice, I think, all together, which wasn't, and I got there and I got back. And I came back, and I forget how long we were there. I think it was 2 or 3 days we were there. And we were lying on this bank with rifles in front of us. And in front of us was this little track, country track, and there was a huge field of corn, golden corn, right straight across the road, which was only about 15 yards wide, the road, the country road. And then there was this field of corn, and then there was the canal, and you could see the Germans on the far side of the canal. And this huge field of corn was only about 15 yards in front of us. So I goes down to the to where the sergeant major was stuck in his hole, and I said, "Sergeant Major," I says, "Do you not think it would be a good idea if we occasionally sprayed this corn with the machine with the bran?" I says, "If we come through that there," I says, "they've only got about 10 or 15 yards," I says, "before they're on top of us," I says, "we kind of see them." No, "you'll get back, and you'll get back in the place where you are." So anyway, I got back, like, and that guy was never out that hole. So eventually, we started to get bombed. The mortars got onto us, and they were knocking hell out of us. So I went to, and then I started getting fire from the right flank, and it was coming across, and I went down into the sergeant major, who was still in his hole, and I said, "Sergeant Major," I says, "we're getting fire from the flank." He says, "All right," he says, "get back on your gun." And so I went back, and I wasn't a gun, I had a rifle, and I went back. And as I went back, I just saw a flash gun past the back of me, the corner of my eye, and I heard someone shout, "Follow me." So I picked my rifle up and I followed him, and he took us to the on the right hand flank, and it was like a ditch, and it was, I think it was a sewerage ditch, but it was a ditch, an open ditch, and he plunged into this water, and I was up to me, the water was up to me mouth, and when I was crawling, and we crawled up this ditch full of water, full of filth and what have you, and Jerry must have spotted when he opened fire on me, and then when we got a wee bit farther up, our own lads must have spotted me, and they must have thought we were Germans coming up, and they opened fire on me, and this sergeant major was about 20 yards in front of me, and he turned round to me and he says, "Is the man following?" I says, "I don't know." And I had my neck in water, and I lifted my arm out of the water. I says, "I'm a bookshee." I says, "I'm not a corporal or not." I says, "You told us to follow." And I says, "I followed." He says, "Well, go back," he says, "and get the man."
Is this the sergeant major that was in the hole?
Yeah. So I said, okay. Well, so I turned round in the water, and I started to crawl back through the water. We're getting machine gun, but I mean, we're pretty well, you know, I mean, we're, I was pretty well, I mean, it was me, I was pretty well covered, like, but could see, well, they knew what we were doing, like, you know, and so I went back, and I got about three quarters of the way back. And what I saw when the lads popped his head round the corner of the thing, like, a lad called Richie Falkus, who was still alive as it happens. And I says, "Bring the lads up, Rich." I says, "Bring them up." And he says, "All right." So anyway, I waited for a bit, and the lads started to come up the thing, like, you know. And by this time, they got the mortars onto it, like, you know. And we crawled up the ditch, and Richie was only about 6 stone soaked and wet, really, you know. And we come to a right hand turn in the ditch, and this sergeant major had disappeared. I don't know where he went to, and I gets under the barbed wire of this fence sort of thing, and I crawls underneath it, and was crawling out, and Dickie Richie was, as I say, was only about 6 stone soaking wet, and of course he took his gears off, like, and crawled underneath the barbed wire, you see, and he gets about 10 yards past there. He was following me, and he says, "Me bloody tabs is in, me tabs is in, me pouches," you know. So instead of going under the way, he just jumped over the wire, picked his gear up, and of course, I mean, there must have been soaking wet, the tabs have been any good, but anyway, never thought, jumped over the way anyway, and he come back, got his tabs and come back. And we crawled. By this time, we're out of the Germans' machine guns, and the our own lads had recognised we, like. And I come to this canal. Well, I could swim, like, so I went into the canal. I swam the canal, and the lads started to come to the bank. And we couldn't swim, some of them, you see. So I went back. I went back into the middle of the canal, and I was up to my neck, and I had my rifle, and it wasn't a very big, it was only about the width of a road, like, you know, not quite as big, it was a very big ditch, we would say, but it was quite a thing, and I was up my neck in water, and the lad says, can it swim? I said, "Well, look," I said, "I'll hide my rifle out," and I says, "You'll jump in and grab the rifle, and I'll pull you across, like, you know." This is what we done, and they were pulling them across, and they were putting them, there was about 4 or 5 people. And we crossed the canal, and then we got into the motor motors were still shelling, and motors were going, and them they used to come in threes, 1-2-3 and 1-2-3, and I saw this sergeant major in one of the little chapels that used to be they used to have the Holy Mary in the on the wayside, the shrines, and it was only about just enough to the statue and maybe about 2 or 3 people, and he was calling the lads, come on in here. Of course, as far as I was concerned, he was finished as far as I was concerned, so I went straight down, I just continued on, and I came to what's now known as the chateau, where they were taking the wounded, like, and I came up, and of course I was totally absolutely lost there, and there was a lad lying on the floor on the ground, and I comes up and I says, I shook him, like, I says, do you know where the Durhams are? And there was a voice from the hedge that was nearby. He said, nigger talking to him, he's dead. He said, he's been dead 10 minutes. So I come back and I thought, oh, can't have gone on like this. So I picked my rifle up and I come back. Went back the way I come. And I got picked up by Northumberland Fusiliers. And he says, where's your unit? I says, I don't know, I haven't got a clue. He says, well, get on the back of the truck.
Were you on your own?
Yeah, well, those 2 or 3 lads, they'd moved away, like, and he says, well, jump on the truck. He says, we're looking for volunteers for the Northern Fusiliers. And I says, I'm a Durham. I says, well, get on the truck, you know. So anyway, I gets on the truck, and the truck was moving along the road, like, and I saw our Major Battersquam, and so I says, there was other two or three lads of the Durhams on the truck, and I says, there's Batty. I says, oh, that's all. So the truck stopped and we jumped off the truck, eh? They got him with Batty. And the sergeant jumps up with his revolver and we're going to shoot with, like, you know. So, of course, we got on quicker than what we'd come off, like, you know. And he took us to this little cottage. And it was a cottage on the corner. There was a road there and a road there. And there was a road there and there was a cottage on the corner there. And there was about 2 or 3 of us, and he took one, and he says, I've got some men, sir. And this officer was standing, like, you know. He says, who are they? He says, Durham Light Infantry. He says, I don't want bloody Durham Light Infantry. He says, I want machine gunners. He says, get the buggers out of here. And just as that, the cottage went up, right? And the officer, he got caught at the back of his neck, and he's the whole of this part here come over his face, you know. The whole part of his back of his hair, his scalp, and it fell right over his face. And he just pushed it back, like that, you know. He says, get these buggers out of here, the cottage went out anyway. So I went out, like, and I just walked through the garden, and it was like on the road. And there was some Northumberland Fusiliers on their big machine guns, like, you know. And I says, is there any Durhams around here? He says, oh, I don't know, Jody. He says, I know there's a one right along here on the road, far down the road. So I walked around along, and there was all sorts going on, like, you know. And I walked along, and comes to different groups of blood. Is there any Durhams there? No, farther along. So anyway, I comes to the end, there's Major Battersquam was lying by himself on the road. And I says, do you mind if I joined you, sir? He says, I'd be very pleased of your company, sonny. And that guy was the man that changed me.
How did you do this?
Just by being him. And we were lying on the thing, and lying, and I says, well, what's going to happen? He says, well, he says, the battalion's gone. She says, nothing left of them. And they were sending over these mini, about three or four mortar bombs, like, you know. And we were, the road was like that, and there was a wee little bit of bank running away from it, you know. And we're lying on that bank and the thing like that. And the mortar started to fall. And fortunately, there must have been, not like the British mortars. British mortars go straight up and straight down, and they've got a spread. But the Germans, seemingly, were firing from, must have been firing from a canny range, and they were coming, and they were coming in like that.
No trajectory.
And then when it exploded, it come that way, you know. Well, we were lying on this here. Well, what was happening? The mortars was exploding on the thing there, and they were going over the top of our heads, you know. And when they did move them up, they moved them up 2 or 3 yards. Now they were bursting behind me, and of course they was gone the other way, you know. And there was one bad one that came, and I thought, Christ. And it literally, when I looked after that, the hole was no more than 2 yards from my feet. And that's as true as I'm sitting in this chair. And Batty never said a word. And I thought they'd got him, like, you know. And I said, sir, are you all right? Are you all right, sir? Oh, I'm all right, sonny. Not to worry, you know. Come along, since we'll try and find the battalion. So, picks the rifle up, and away we follow this after this body. He goes into the big chateau. Went into the chateau, which was being used. It was where I originally started from, you know. And when we went into there, and they were using it as a first aid post. And we walked in, and there was a big wide corridor, about 5 or 6 foot wide. And they brought this lad in. There was two soldiers, one soldier on each underneath his arm, and they were dragging him along the passage. And as they dragged him along the passage, you would just think he was a brush, and the red was coating the whole of the passage, you know. And they dragged him in and took him into one of the rooms. He must have been dead anyway, but there was another lad there, and he was coughing, he got one chest, and he was coughing, and all his lungs come out through his mouth, like, you know, the whole lot come out through his mouth. And there was blokes lying all over the place. And so Batty comes, he says, well, he says, not much here. He says, well, come on. So we went out, and after that, things was a bit vague. And I think the A company, you're getting word that A company was going to put an attack in on the railway line. And so he said to me, he says, come on, sonny. And he was going to a picnic, you know. And come along, little boy, you know. And we went in with a behind the company, like, but didn't come to know. They got chased and whatever. And we came back, and he left me. he left me. We come across some stragglers and they were sitting in the ditch, you know, and he was gone. So I don't know what happened to him after that. But I saw him. I saw him when the following year. The next time I saw him, and I saw him coming down. It was at in Tiverton, and as I say, he was the guy that gave me courage.